Right, hi there. Well, it's a really long time, I realise, since I've done a podcast or a vodcast or a Facebook Live, whatever we want to call this. And I thought it would be a good day to do it. Yesterday was a funny day because it was quite a bleak day in terms of the UK and the US. We both made new records, unfortunately, in terms of the number of people dying. Hi, Anita, cousin. So we had a new record in terms of the number of people dying in a day, both here in the UK and also in the US, of COVID-19. We had an announcement that London was in a critical emergency, the sort of emergency you usually announce if there's been some kind of major incident, like a terrorist assault or something like that. We heard that the fire brigade are now having to help run ambulances because sometimes people are staying outside hospitals for many, many hours, not able to get in. I've heard that similar things are happening in other, in parts of America, where hospitals are lining up ambulances outside, treating COVID-19 patients in those ambulances. Some hospitals are in danger of running out of oxygen. And so things are a bit bleak. Of course, the other side is there's all the vaccines going on as well. But then there's controversy about the vaccines and the rollout of the vaccines and how to make sure the right people get them and where how you should space them and all of this thing going on. So there's a kind of weird time sense. And yet, you know, I've been driven a fair bit over the last few days because I've had some appointments, and I'll talk about that in a little while. I was amazed at how many people were on the streets. So there's almost a sort of sense of fatigue amongst people, I think, about sort of crisis fatigue, that is it really such a big crisis right now? And the answer seems to be yes. We have this new variant. It's very possible that the new variant isn't just a UK thing. That's one of the first myths I just wanted to sort of highlight, is that people seem to think it's a UK thing and it arose in the UK, and it may have arisen in the UK. It was certainly identified in the UK. But by the time it was identified, it probably already spread to other parts of the country and may even have come to the world, rather, and may even have come from other parts of the world. I mean, I'm a bit suspicious. Kent is pretty close to that tunnel. So either, you know, it may have come in from the continent, or indeed it may have gone to the continent. And I'm hearing rumours that it may be in the US. I've not seen anything confirmed about that. But my understanding, and this is quite important for people in other parts of the world to understand, is that the UK genuinely is testing the genome of more of the swabs than anywhere else in the world. And so apparently 1 in 10 people who have a nose swab done in the UK and test positive for COVID-19, they are then looking at that in detail to see what mutations it has. And apparently no country in the world is doing that as much. So, you know, this new variant could be spreading elsewhere. And of course, viruses mutate all the time, and so, you know, similar mutations may arise elsewhere to try and make this vaccine, this virus, unfortunately, spread more aggressively. And that certainly seems to be the case here in the UK, and one wonders whether it's also the case in other parts of Europe and even the US, where we're seeing, you know, it's like the third wave, really, although in the US, I guess it's almost been one wave sort of just gradually going up, although not necessarily in each part of the country. And I think that's the challenge for parts of the US. It's such a large country that, you know, one town might be almost unaffected by COVID and the next door town might be having a major problem. So I think that can cause issues as well. So there's the background, there's the situation. Now my position is I'm not a haematologist, I'm not an immunologist, I'm not an infectious diseases doctor, but I am a doctor. I worked in the NHS for a number of years. I've also studied not just medicine, not just psychiatry, actually, which was my specialty, but pharmaceutical medicine, and I've worked within the industry, so I understand clinical research quite well. And I've got a personal interest in what's going on with COVID, because you've probably heard about this phrase in the UK anyway, the clinically extremely vulnerable. Well, if there was a subgroup of clinically extremely vulnerable that was at the top of that list, I'm afraid I'd be in it. I've got a blood cancer, and the research suggests that even for people like me who are in remission, I mean, my blood cancer is at the moment, you know, well under control, but it's damaged my immune system, and more of that shortly. And as a result of damaging my immune system, I'm particularly vulnerable. And so it's been a great concern for me, and I've had to make radical decisions, one of which included moving out of my family home back in March. I thought it was just going to be for a few weeks. I did go back for a little while when the rate went down. So in the summer in the UK, it was about 1 in 900 people or less that actually were still active with COVID. And so when you get to that sort of level, you start to feel, oh, maybe it's not so high risk. But right now, the other thing that was announced yesterday was that we've now got to about 1 in 30 Londoners. Currently, if you screen them randomly, and we have this random screening process here in the UK called that's run by the ONS, the Office of National Statistics, or at least reported by them. And that particular programme, as I say, in the summer, it dropped as low as 1 in 900 people, but now 1 in 30, if you just randomly screen them, will actually have coronavirus shedding from their nose and so be infectious. They won't all have symptoms, they won't all get sick, but they can all presumably pass it on. I think the people who are sick are more likely to pass it on, but even people who are not sick can pass it on. So that makes it really quite scary for someone like me. And I, as I say, I'm more or less completely staying in the home right now, apart from hospital appointments, and that's a bit scary sometimes, so I'm going to do a few less of those, I think. And also, you know, going out for walks, where I make sure that, you know, I go somewhere where it's quite remote and away from other people. So I'm trying to keep safe, but obviously you can't shield yourself completely. So the anxiety for all of us, I suppose, right now is how do we protect ourselves, particularly if we're vulnerable, particularly if we're either older or we've got a disease that makes us more vulnerable. And I guess the questions are, what do I do if I get sick? And what do I do to stop? Sorts of remedies you can do yourself, just like as if you've got flu. And for many people, it will just feel like a flu. But one thing that might be worth considering is if you can go onto Amazon or some other online store and try to get yourself a saturation monitor, just because you can put that on your finger and it will show you what your blood saturation levels are and what your pulse is. And if your pulse is below 100 and if your saturation is, you know, sort of 95, 96, 97, 98, that kind of level, then that's quite reassuring. Now, having said that, if you're feeling very breathless, or you're feeling really sick, or you just feel really, really rough, or you're throwing up, you can't keep food down, all those kinds of things, you should obviously still consult a doctor. You shouldn't allow a monitor like that to sort of falsely reassure you. But what we have seen is that some people can actually not feel completely breathless, but actually notice a drop in the saturation. And I've certainly seen some people drop to 80 or below and not even really realize that they were that sick. So that saturation machine, you know, as I say, shouldn't be used to not go to a doctor if you're feeling sick. You should still contact your doctor in the UK via ringing 111 or your GP surgery during working hours. And I guess similarly in the US. And obviously, you know, if your saturations are dropping, that's when you would, you know, you'd need to get yourself to A&E, really, even if you don't feel that unwell. So that's quite an important thing, and it's something that you can do to protect your family, whether you're vulnerable or not, actually. And again, if your pulse goes up much above 100 and if you're at rest, then that's a sign that your body might be sort of struggling a bit. But as I say, you know, the hospitals are there to help us, so the doctors are there to help us, but much better to prevent. And I know there's a lot of sort of myths about the vaccines, and I thought I would sort of try and cover a few of those. And as I say, there is a series of articles I've written on all of this, on blood cancer uncensored with the data, so I'm not going to get into numbers and specifics. But everything I say today is a few other questions that I haven't yet covered. And so if you're interested in getting into the data, then you can do that. But I'm going to just explain some things now, in sort of hopefully simple terms that will help people understand. So what can we do to prevent? Well, the first thing is, if you've been sick already with COVID-19, then hopefully you will develop antibodies. And if you have developed antibodies, and it is possible to get an antibody test done, and they tend to stay visible in your blood for a few months, but the ability to make them will hopefully continue for longer than that. So what can happen is if you get reinfected, and you can get reinfected, and that's important to understand, don't think that you're safe. In fact, I discovered in some of the clinical research, it seemed like the people that had tested positive for antibodies, and I haven't really explained this on the state site yet, but that's coming. I'm going to go into this in more detail in a future post. But the people who had been infected with COVID and who had antibodies actually, if anything, were more likely in the studies to get COVID-19 than the people who hadn't. And I guess there's a little bit of a bias there, because if you've already caught COVID-19, that must indicate that you're the sort of person who's been exposed once, and so you can be exposed again. Now, the hope would be that if you have antibodies, if you get it again, you might not get it as severely, but the trouble is you could still certainly infect other people. So what might happen is, first time round, you might get the COVID pneumonia that we're all so concerned about, where the virus actually is in the lungs and causing problems in the lungs. But then maybe the second time round, it might be more like a cold. So you might just sort of be sneezing and coughing, and you might think, well, this isn't COVID, it wasn't like that the first time. And so you might think you can't spread it. But if you're coughing and sneezing especially, and even if you're not coughing and sneezing, if you've just got a sore throat or a little bit of congestion, and that is COVID potentially, then obviously you can be sort of spreading that. So we do know that you can get it again. But the interesting news is, and this is important, because one of the questions people are going to ask, which, as I say, I haven't answered yet, but I will be, and I will show you the data when I get around to doing that, is, you know, why are people who've had COVID still being offered the vaccine? And that's why, because actually those patients, and it was about, you know, 2% in one of the studies, about 1.5% in the other, something like that. Those patients who had antibodies did have, if anything, an increased risk. In fact, one of the studies, a dramatically increased risk of catching COVID again during the study after they'd been vaccinated. But the vaccine also worked. So the vaccine, it seems like, gives us better protection than having had the infection. So the infection will give you some protection, or hopefully give you some protection. And hopefully, if you do catch COVID again, that the hope would be that it wouldn't be a severe second time round. Though there's no guarantees there, of course, but that would be the hope. But the vaccine would offer extra protection, even to those who'd had it. Now, antibodies, just for anyone who doesn't understand what an antibody is, and specifically for the COVID virus. The virus, you've probably seen pictures, it's like there's a central sort of ball, if you like, and then there are spikes that stick out of the ball, almost like hooks, really. And those spikes, or hooks, attach onto the cells in your nose, your throat, and in your lungs, and grip onto them and get into the cells, and then obviously can inject the genetic material from the virus into the cell and cause the cell to produce lots and lots of copies of the virus. And that's how the virus works. Now, when people get sick, they can make antibodies to either the core of the virus or the spike, and typically it would probably be both. But the ones that seem to be most important are the spike antibodies, the anti-spike antibodies, if you like. And we now know that if you have sufficient anti-spike antibodies in your blood, you will probably not get severe COVID. You might not even get COVID at all. And so the vaccine trials are really encouraging. They've randomized, I don't know, maybe 152,000 people or something like that, I think, across all three of the studies. I can't do the maths now, but yeah, a lot of people. And in all of those people, even after just one vaccine, a few days after just one dose of the vaccine, none of them got severe COVID. Some people got mild COVID, who'd been vaccinated, but none of them got severe COVID. In the placebo group or the control group, some people did get severe COVID. And so now that doesn't mean, of course, you know, because that was a select group, they didn't have the most severely unwell patients, they didn't necessarily have that many of the older patients, although there were some. So we can't guarantee that the vaccine is going to prevent every case of severe COVID or every case of hospitalization or every case of death. But the hope is certainly that it's going to reduce it dramatically. And one of the other reasons why we believe that is because when they've looked at patients who are in hospital with COVID and struggling and doing badly, and they've tested their antibody levels, patients that make their own antibodies do really well in general and recover, or more likely to recover, let's put it that way. They're less likely to get severely ill and ultimately to die. Patients who don't make their own antibodies, there was one particular study where unfortunately those patients, although there was only a small group of them in hospital, they made up half of the deaths. Now, for someone like me, sorry, I'm not getting emotional here. Something just got caught in my throat. I had a oat cake, I think, for lunch just before this video, so sorry about that. I should have had a drink here. Anyway, so those patients that don't make the antibodies themselves are obviously in more danger. Now, there's a problem here because blood cancer patients, particularly those with CLL, or those who've been relatively recently treated, or those who've now got a low B lymphocyte count because of their treatment, or who don't really have very many healthy lymphocytes because of competition with the other cancer cells, or have other reasons for immune compromise and are not able to make antibodies, to make new antibodies to new infections. We are the ones that are at greater risk, and the evidence is mounting about that. So one of the pieces of evidence that's very encouraging though, is there was a monoclonal antibody. So what they did was they took antibodies from healthy people, and you may have heard of convalescent plasma, by the way, and convalescent plasma is certainly something that looks like it's got some promise, particularly probably in those who don't make their own antibodies, because what you do there is you take antibodies from people who've been sick in their plasma, and you give that fresh plasma to other people. It's a little bit like something called IVIG or SCIG, which some people with blood cancer will know quite a lot about. Many of you won't though, but what that is pooled antibodies from lots of people that are then purified and given to people. And eventually the hope would be that that product would have some COVID protection in it. But because of the time lag of production, at the moment it doesn't. So interestingly for me, the other thing that happened to me on Friday, two things happened to me on Friday, and I'll talk about the second in a little while. But one of the things that happened to me on Friday is I finally got an email that I have been approved for that antibody replacement. Now, unfortunately, that won't help me with COVID at the moment, although it might in the future, or should in the future. But what it will do is help me get slightly fewer infections of other things. So I've had a sinus infection recently. I've got a viral nose infection I can't get rid of. I had an infection of my leg when I wounded it earlier this year. And I get lots of infections, sometimes chest infections. I had pneumonia in the past. And people with blood cancers who have poor immune systems will often have recurrent infections. And so, you know, that is a good news for me, although it doesn't help with COVID. But the people who have this fresh convalescent plasma, it seems to help. But what they've also done, some of the pharma companies, and Regeneron in the US, Lilly, and then AstraZeneca, which is more of a sort of European company, and you might have heard of AstraZeneca because of the link with Oxford for the vaccine, they have done research looking at antibodies that originally came from people's plasma who'd got better, convalescent plasma, who'd fought off the COVID, who'd made that spike antibody, the anti-spike antibody, and they then cloned that. And so for Regeneron, what they found was that people who were making their own antibodies already, who tested positive when they were sick in hospital and they were given the Regeneron, it didn't really make much difference. But people, because they were already fighting off the COVID, and so most of those people recovered anyway. But for people who, like me, might well not make the antibodies, if they tested negative in hospital, i.e. they haven't made antibodies of their own, and then when we're given this infusion of monoclonal antibodies, which just means humanly manufactured antibodies, they've cloned the antibodies, they've copied the antibodies from these recovering people. Those people did incredibly well. I think, if I remember correctly, it was something like a 99% reduction in the viral load in those people. And that's why, you may remember, Donald Trump, and I'm not going to talk politics, but Donald Trump, when he got sick with coronavirus, was given the Regeneron antibody cocktail to try and help him. And there is a small chance that even outside of the US, people might be able to get hold of that. There's a way to apply through your doctor for compassionate use, but there's only 300,000 copies of that available worldwide. So I was quite pleased to be able to volunteer for a study, because my concern is that if I get the vaccine, and I probably will still have the vaccine, because although it may be less effective, and in my case it might not work at all because of the stage I'm at with my blood cancer, people with earlier blood cancers, it probably will work for, to be honest. We don't know for sure. It shouldn't give any more side effects than for normal people, but depending on your immune system will depend obviously on whether or not you make the antibodies. So that's how the vaccine works. It prompts your immune system to make antibodies. And it does it in a funny way, because it actually prompts you, a few of your cells in your arm where you're injected, to actually make the spike protein yourself in your bone, in your own body, so that then your virus, your lymphocytes, if they're healthy, will be able to recognize that and make the antibodies you need, and then you will have antibodies in your blood that will protect you if you come across COVID later on. And the really good news about these vaccines is they seem to work much better than we think. As we say, nobody got severe illness, and 98%, I think it was, of people had antibodies of just a week or two, a couple of weeks after the first dose of the first vaccine. And that's why the UK is spreading out the vaccine, because they believe that it's something like 90% effective in preventing the disease, and as I say, about 98% effective in terms of giving you the antibodies, and so therefore hopefully close to 100%, at least in a healthy person, at preventing severe COVID-19 and hospitalisation and such like. So the quicker we can roll out these vaccines, the better. But as I say, for people like me, for whom the vaccine might not work, this could be, you know, important piece of information for you, that both in the US and the UK, and I think in some other countries as well right now, but I mentioned the US and the UK because that's the majority of my Facebook friends and readers of my various sites. There is this opportunity to volunteer for the study, which is what I've done. So on Friday, bizarrely, I was able just to go to Enfield, of all places, doing some world-leading research on Lincoln Road, for those of you that know Enfield. And I was able to volunteer there for an injection. It goes into your behind, unfortunately, because they need a large area of muscle. So I kind of made a joke with one of my son's younger son. I said, your dad's volunteering his butt for the research. And so I went to Enfield, and they'd obviously, you know, done a bit of a health screen of me, and to make sure I was the right sort of person. What they're actually looking for is people who are unlikely to respond to the vaccine, and they want people before they've had the vaccine, although I can have the vaccine later on. And they offered me a place a matter of days after I contacted them. And if you go onto Blood Cancer Uncensored, you'll see more information about the study. It's called Volunteering for a Monoclonal Antibody Study. And if you look down there, there's a little link that you can say, if you, you know, click here to find out if you're eligible, and they'll contact you. They rang me the next day, and a few days later, I turned up there, and it was all well protected. I was sitting right next to an open window with a mask on, and only really one person was in the room for the majority of the time. Another person popped in and out briefly, but I was only really exposed to one person, but they were masked up, and I was right next to the window, which again is probably one of the main things you can do to protect yourself. If you do have to be with somebody or in a hospital or something, is open that window, let the air in. And so they gave me this injection, didn't really hurt that much. Obviously I don't know whether I got the placebo or whether I got the drug, but there's a two in three chance that I got the drug or the antibodies. So I drove home thinking, you know, there's not many decisions you can make in life that might potentially actually save your life. And I might have done that yesterday by having that injection. Because obviously I can't guarantee that, you know, although I'm keeping myself as safe as I can, I will still keep doing that. You know, you do sometimes have to go up to a clinic for an appointment, or something could happen, some emergency could happen that means you have to be exposed to people. So I drove home yesterday thinking to myself, I've now got a 2 out of 3 chance that I've got antibodies in my body to the COVID-19, which I probably wouldn't make if I have the vaccine, and I will probably have the vaccine in a month or two whenever I'm offered it. And that's okay, I can do that despite being on the study. They just would obviously want me to tell them when that happened, because it would obviously, you know, potentially, although maybe not in my case, potentially I would make antibodies. Now, on this subject, this is really important. If you have a normal immune system and you have the vaccine, you can more or less guarantee that you're going to make antibodies, and you can more or less guarantee that it's going to protect you. You still have to be careful though, because what we're trying to do is stop the spread of this disease as well. And what we don't know is whether the vaccine stops the spread, or whether having antibodies, as I say, just, if you like, converts the coronavirus from a pneumonia, which is a chest infection, to more like a cold, just in your nose and throat. Great for you, because it will save your life potentially, and certainly hopefully save any chance that you might have to go into hospital. And you know, we're really hoping that hospital counts are going to drop down rapidly once the vaccine is rolled out more widely. But it may not be good for your family member who might be older than you, more vulnerable than you, or who might be immune compromised like me. And so you should still be careful. We must still keep up with all this shielding and social distancing and things, which is such a pain. We just need to keep going for a little bit longer until the count starts to go down again. You know, 1 in 30 is not a good risk, really. Once it gets to 1 in 900, like it was in the summer, or you know, one in 1,000, one in 10,000 eventually, you know, we'll know then that it's much more under control, and then we can kind of relax a little bit more at that point, even if we're not personally immune. And that's the interesting thing, you see. What we really need is this sort of shielding of everybody else. But as I say, if I do unfortunately meet somebody, hopefully I've now got antibodies in me. So that's something that you can volunteer for if you're concerned about whether the vaccine's going to work for you. And like I say, it's all about the antibodies. And so if you don't go for this trial, and if you do get vaccinated, and if you're worried that your immune system is not tip-top, you know, and by which I mean you've got a blood cancer or you've got some other reason that you know that you might not be making antibodies, one thing you can do, and for some reason this hasn't become like just standard across the UK, because I'm sure they can't afford to do this for every single person in the UK, but for those of us who are impaired, we can ask our doctors, probably our hospital doctors more than our GPs, but we can ask our doctors, look, I'm really worried, I've been shielding all this time, I'm scared stiff that I'm going to get COVID, and lay that on thick if you have to, because I mean, why wouldn't you be scared? I mean, who wouldn't be? And say, look, I really want to know, has this vaccine actually worked? And the best indicator, it's not 100% guaranteed, of course, as I've already tried to explain, because you can still potentially get COVID, hopefully more mildly, even if you've got these antibodies. But the best indicator that the vaccine has worked for you when you've had the chance to take it is that you've got these antibodies. So as I say, everything is pointing towards the idea that antibodies are important. People who don't make antibodies are more likely to get severely sick. They're more likely to die, unfortunately. People who do make antibodies, even if they get quite sick, they're more likely to recover. People who haven't made antibodies and who are given artificial antibodies or given convalescent plasma seem to be more likely to get better, particularly with the monoclonal ones. That seems to be stronger. And as I say, there is a small chance that your doctor might be able to apply for the Regeneron antibody for you if you're a blood cancer patient suffering and not able to make those antibodies, perhaps in hospital. And the earlier you get that, the better. So I don't know how easy that is in the UK. It's still quite difficult in the US because the supplies are not that many. But apparently they're getting fewer applications than there is supply. So it's definitely worth doing, whether you're in the UK or the US. Ask your doctor, can we get the Regeneron? Can we get convalescent plasma if we can't get the Regeneron? Can we be vaccinated beforehand in order to try and make the antibodies? Can we take this trial that I'm on to give us antibodies? And if not, can we at least, before we get ill, once we've had the vaccine, a few weeks even after the first dose, we'll be fine. Can we, those of us who are immune compromised, can we please have our antibodies checked? No, and I don't know who's going to watch this, but it's a real shame that this has not been a national decision. And so I would make a plea that a national decision is made. Because here's my worry, okay, and it's my worry for those with blood cancer who are watching this, because I know this will be going out in some of the places where I'm part of, some of the forums on Facebook for people with blood cancer, onto my blood cancer website. And obviously it's going out to some of my friends. I mean, it's a bit of a mixed audience. But for those of us who've got blood cancer, particularly actually CLL, especially if you're post-treatment with CLL, especially if you're either on IVIG or it's being considered whether you might need IVIG soon, particularly if you know that your lymphocyte count is low, or particularly if you know that your immunoglobulins are low, or if you're just someone who struggles with a lot of infections, you know, all of those might be indicators that you might not make antibodies. Actually, this vaccine seems to be quite strong, and it seems to prompt more people to make antibodies than a lot of other vaccines do, and that's partly because of the nice way this vaccine's made, the new way this vaccine's made. It seems to be much more effective than we wildly hoped it would be, and obviously we'll see in the real world whether it's as effective in the real world as it was in the trials. But there's every reason to think they will be, all three of them. But if you can ask your doctor, maybe your hospital doctor, to do that antibody test a few weeks after you have your vaccination, if you're immune compromised, then you can have reassurance, hopefully, because if you've got that antibody curve, then that's great, because you'll know, I've made antibodies. So then you can have some confidence that for certain, it should at least mean that if you get COVID-19, hopefully that the illness that you will then get will be less severe than the illness you would have otherwise got. Again, you still need to be careful, you still need to shield, still need to make sure you don't pass it on to other people, and we can't guarantee that there will be no severe illness in vaccinated people, but at least if you've got antibodies there, basically you've done everything you can at that point. If you don't have antibodies there, then you know you need to be even more careful, because you know that the vaccine hasn't worked for you, because if there's no antibodies, then the vaccine hasn't worked. So, like I say, I personally think there's a real risk that someone who has an immune compromise, blood cancer or some other reason for that, gets the vaccine, believes that they're protected, relaxes their shielding, meets up with people, maybe even breaks some of the rules. I hope they wouldn't do that, but they might. Goes to shops. I mean, shops are very dangerous places for people with a poor immune system at the moment. Really, for anyone, you should minimise your time in shops, even if you're healthy right now. Because 1 in 30 other shoppers are going to be breeding virus into that shop. So, terrible thought. But, what I don't want is for people to have the vaccine, assume they're okay, and then go out there and get really, really sick. I mean, that would be an awful thing for happening right now, when we've spent, you know, almost a year protecting ourselves, to then sort of relax things too quickly. So that's why I think, ask your doctor now, if you're in that position. Ask your doctor now, say, look, when I have the vaccine, will I be able to have the antibodies? And they might say to you, yeah, of course, that's a great idea, because it's something they do all the time. It's one of the criteria I had to pass, if you like, or I don't know if it should be called pass or fail, because I had what's called a vaccine trial, okay? And that was one of the things I had to do in order to qualify for the IVIG, which is, as I said earlier, antibody replacement of all the antibodies, not just the COVID ones, and unfortunately not many COVID ones at the moment, because it takes a while for them to make it and produce it and store it. But things like flu, pneumonia, all kinds of other diseases, there'll be antibodies that they'll now start infusing into me and giving me from other people. And it's all, you know, being purified, and they check it to make sure that, you know, it's a good mix for you and all the rest of it. And but the reason I mention that is because in order to qualify for that, one of the things I had to do was have a test vaccine. So I was vaccinated sometime in the autumn, I can't remember exactly when, and then a few weeks after that they tested with a different vaccine, not to do with COVID, a different illness, and then they tested me to see whether or not I'd made antibodies, and unfortunately said to me, Adrian, you made no antibodies at all. Now, of course, that doesn't guarantee I wouldn't make antibodies at all to the COVID vaccine, because as I say, that's quite strong, quite a good vaccine, but it's certainly an indicator, so that's a bit of a concern. So what I'm trying to say is this idea of testing the antibodies after a vaccine is not new, it's not something I've made up, and so your doctor may very well be like, yeah, that's a great idea, but then your doctor might not have thought of it, or a nurse you speak to might not have thought of it, and you might be the first person to suggest it to them, and then hopefully there can be some conversation, and also some conversation at a national level, to try and keep people like me safe, so that we know whether or not the vaccine has worked, because as I say, it could be a very dangerous time for us coming up soon, where you know, headline infection rates might start to go down, hospitalisation rates might start to go down, death rates might start to go down, and hopefully that will happen fairly soon, who knows when, but you know, that will all start to happen as the vaccine gets rolled out. But we might be more vulnerable, because lots of people might be walking around still with asymptomatic disease, and if you've got antibodies, then perhaps you'd be fine, but if you don't have antibodies, then someone like me could still get a severe illness. And again, for older people, sometimes older people might be a bit less likely to respond to a vaccine as well. Although there's good data that if you're just old and you haven't got any other conditions, that hopefully the vaccine will still work for you. So I don't think necessarily every single person in the country should be demanding these antibodies, because then of course there wouldn't be enough testing for everyone. But certainly, you know, if you're somebody like me who's got blood cancer and is concerned about your immune system, then you should do that. Now, I guess I've covered almost everything. The only thing I just might sort of mention in passing, I know there's been a lot of concern about this idea of spreading out the vaccine. And so in the UK, and now also in one province in Canada, they're doing the same thing. And the idea for this is twofold, actually. One is because we can then get some immunity to more people more quickly. So it's all about rolling out the immunity as quickly as possible. I mean, the UK are talking about, you know, trying to get to like 2 million doses a week and things like that. And we really want to roll it out quickly to the most vulnerable first, to the people who are most likely to die first. That's the idea. And to healthcare workers and social workers who might infect those vulnerable people. So we're trying to reduce the death count, trying to reduce the pressure on the NHS, so hopefully then we can begin to open up society a lot more. So we're trying to roll out that vaccine. And so the idea that the UK government and the UK health people, it's not really the government, it was the health advisors, the vaccine committee, have said, look, we're going to try and spread this out, give everyone one shot, wait not 3 weeks, but 12 weeks, or up to 12 weeks, and give them a shot later on, the second shot. And that means that we can double the number of people that we vaccinate in a given amount of time, and with a given amount of vaccine, provided, of course, the vaccine's coming later down the line, which it is. We've got all these orders in for more and more vaccine to come. So this is sensible, rather than holding back the vaccine like they were originally doing. And some people were a bit concerned about this, but all the evidence and all the science, in my view, seems to stack up quite nicely. And I won't go into the details of that now, except really to say the point that I mentioned earlier, which is after just one vaccine dose already, I think it was 98%, and forgive me if I've got the figure slightly wrong, but certainly close to 100% of people already got antibody response. And it was 100% within the trials anyway, that didn't get the severe disease. And so the belief is that if you look at that vaccine level of response, there's no way it's going to drop off so quickly as between 3 and 12 weeks. It's going to last longer than that. And in most other illnesses, if you extend the vaccine gap like that, actually, if anything, it makes the vaccine more effective. And there was some data within the Oxford vaccine, certainly, that those who had it after 12 weeks within the trial actually seemed to have a better immune response, a more durable immune response, an immune response that lasts longer in terms of the antibodies and also the other ways in which we protect ourselves. And I should say, it's not all about antibodies, but it is a lot about antibodies. There's also T cells involved and such like, but I didn't want to get into all of that in this call. Now, I've been talking for a long time. The only other thing, bearing in mind that there's questions watching, is I have heard some people talk about things like, you know, is it the mark of the beast? No, there's no evidence of that. Are there aborted baby parts in the vaccine? No, there are no aborted baby parts in the vaccine. You know, is there a chip in the vaccine? No, there's not a chip in the vaccine. You know, will the vaccine make you infertile? No, it's not going to make you infertile. You know, should you have it in pregnancy? Perhaps not, because we don't know for sure what it will do in a pregnant woman. But it's a sort of question to weigh up with your doctors. You know, what about if you've got very severe allergies, or particularly if you're allergic to anything in the vaccine? Then definitely not. That's one of the main things that can happen as a side effect, is allergic reaction, and some people get a very severe allergic reaction. So that's something to discuss with your doctor if you're not sure about. There are side effects, but if you get a sore arm, if you get a temperature, if you feel sick, don't worry, you're not getting COVID. Well, not unless you were already infected with COVID before you had the vaccine, of course. But you may be having symptoms of an immune reaction, and that's okay, because that shows that hopefully your immune system is working. But as I say, if you're someone with a blood cancer, don't assume that because you've got a sore arm, you've definitely got the antibodies. It's your body trying to make antibodies, yes. And so if you've got a healthy immune system, you can know that that's perhaps a sign that you're making antibodies. But nonetheless, the take-home message, really, is make sure that by all means possible, you get antibodies into you, especially if you've got a poor immune system. How can you get antibodies? Number one, by being infected, which obviously we don't want, but that does make antibodies. Number two, by being vaccinated. Number three, by getting either convalescent plasma or potentially this Regeneron antibody if you're sick, when you've got COVID, if you don't make antibodies particularly. And number four, by checking you've got antibodies would be a good thing to do, by having that blood test. Or number five, by enrolling for this study, which I've enrolled for, and as I say, some of my friends are enrolling for it as well. You can complete an online form, or you can find the list of sites on clinicaltrials.gov, and you can contact those sites, but probably it's easiest just to fill the form in, and the link, as I say, is on blood cancer and sensitive. And so a few of you have been watching, which is really good, and just as a reward for that, I should just give you the opportunity to ask any questions. I've probably, hopefully, answered all of them, so there may not be any questions at this moment. But if you have got questions that I haven't answered, then now is your chance to either type them in the comments section right now, and if I get anything ping up, I'll answer it straight away. Or if you watch this video later, and usually people watch it not necessarily immediately live, then in the comments section, write any questions. And if I haven't already answered it on bloodcanceruncensored.com, I will try and do that. You have to bear with me because these articles take a while to write and I don't have much energy at the moment in construct. I've got some, I've got enough to do a little bit of this, and so it might take me a few days to get through some of these, but I have sort of read the clinical papers over the last sort of few weeks and tried to work this up, and some of it is kind of nearly ready for publication. It was originally going to be one really, really long article, and I thought, hang on, this is probably not so smart. I'll do it in little short snippets answering the question. So there's a question, you know, what about volunteering for the monoclonal antibody trial? There's a question, why has the UK spread out the doses? There's a question, just generally about the data. There will be a question later on about, you know, is there any evidence that one of the vaccines is better than the other? You know, there'll be a question about side effects, all of those things. So I should be going through them over the next little while as I've got the energy to complete the task, as it were. Okay, I haven't seen any questions come up. I don't know how long I've been talking for. I hope I haven't bored you too much. But I know some people prefer to hear things rather than read things. And if it's all just been a bit fast, you can obviously go back and watch it again. Or, as I say, you can follow the link to bloodcanceruncensored.com and read some of these articles, and I hope that'll be helpful to some of you. Now, just one last thing. You know how Facebook is. They seem to love spreading negative stuff and all the rest of it, and then not necessarily spreading, hopeful, positive stuff. So, but you can do your bit to help with that. You can like, you can share, you can put it on your own wall. All of those things will help other people to see this video if you think it would be helpful for them. Or indeed, you can send a link to somebody that you think it might be particularly useful for. Okay, well, that wore me out. I don't know about you. I think I'm going to watch a movie or something. Perhaps watch some Netflix, I don't know. Thanks a lot then, everyone. Bye.
Well, you've made it to the end of an episode of Adrian Warnock's Christian podcast. You must have some stamina. Well done. And if you liked what you heard, you know what to do. Subscribe, review, tell all your friends about it. And in the meantime, why not visit adrianwarnock.com?